There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about Superdraft. Fun new way to play daily fantasy sports. It's different than the other sites. There's no prices. You play the guys you want. It's an exclusive multiplier point system. So the cheaper the guy would be on another site, likely the higher multiplier they got. They have football, a big tournament each week, and $25,000 total pot, $10 entry fee. Awesome stuff there. They got baseball, golf, tons and tons of fun right now. I'm imagining they'll swoop into basketball as that season is right around the corner. So come check out Superdraft in your app store or superdraft.io online. Use promo code Bubba when you signed up, and you'll get a free $10 deposit bonus when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. So promo code Bubba, Superdraft, awesome, awesome time there. Also, if you give a rating and review on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it. It would help the podcast out a ton as they're starting some new ways to regulate the podcast and rate the podcast and all that good stuff. So if you give a rating and review on iTunes, I'd really, really appreciate it. But for now, welcome to Bench with Bubba, episode 212, recapping the fantasy football week 2 action with a look ahead to week 3 with Steve Rappin of Fighting Chance Fantasy. Back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 212. Going to recap your week 2 fantasy football action with a look ahead to week 3. It's going to be a fun one. Got a special guest on the show to help break it all down for us. You can find him on Twitter at FantasyGeek37. He's a part of the Fighting Chance family, family, literally. And his name goes by Steve Rappin. How are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing great tonight. How are you doing, Bubba?
I am doing great. If we didn't want to, I figured we'd just keep talking offline, but I might as well hit record eventually. The conversations are great, but it is awesome to have you on. I've always enjoyed the Fighting Chance folks, and I don't know why it took me this long, but I'm glad you're on the show to talk a little fantasy football with us.
Well, I'm glad to be able to join you as well. And you know what? Ryan and I like to have a lot of fun over at Fighting Chance, and we got a great group of people with us. We don't take ourselves too seriously. We do a lot of kind of like fun drafts throughout the season where we'll just be bored one day and we'll say, let's draft the best 90s TV shows or the best comedy movies. And we'll just pick, you know, random people on Twitter. We'll put it out there, first come, first serve. And, you know, we always try to keep it light and keep it fun, but still give you a lot of the best fantasy football info out there. So, man, I'm happy to be here tonight.
Yeah, I think that's one reason why I really gravitate to you guys over there is I'm a pretty like low key, sarcastic, just roll with the punches type guy, and it fits in with a lot of the stuff you're just talking about there. So I enjoy what you guys got over there. Before we get started, you mentioned some of the you know different wacky things you guys do over there. Why don't you let everybody know what you guys got going on at Fighting Chance so they can go check it out?
Well, first of all, let's just say outside of the football, if you want your football stuff, we can still got you there. We have our guy Gary Haddow goes through and does weekly waivers. We got Casey Kasem does streamers. We have Kevin Tompkins putting out his rankings every week. We have, boy, we have our podcast. We have Brian Drake and Dwayne McFarland doing the Tuesday Night Hustle. We have Polka Pat that does some hockey coverage. We're known for football, but you can still get some good hockey coverage from us as well. Man, we just got a great team. Every day you can find something new out there. Right now, we talked about the fun stuff. Ryan is recruiting right now. He's a big fan of Survivor, and we've been doing Fantasy Survivor for the last several seasons. And last year we had one or two people from previous seasons that were in the group. Ryan and I also had the War Dog, who was on last season on our podcast, who's a big NFBC fantasy baseball player. You can check that out on our site, fantasy, fightingchancefantasy.com, and go to the podcast section. So that's kind of the fun thing that we got going, in addition to the football stuff that you can find at our site daily.
I love it. Yeah, everyone, go check it out. It's fun. I've done the summer blockbuster drafts. I've done some of the other fun ones they've got there. I've done some of the movie ones. I don't notice it all the time, and then all of a sudden I'll get a DM from Ryan. Hey, you want to vote on this real quick? Oh yeah, dude. So yeah, my bad. I have fun with it because it is fun debate. So go check it out. Go get the fantasy and all the other good stuff over there at Fighting Chance. But let's talk some week two with kind of a twist to look ahead to week three here, Steve. We don't have to go super deep on every game. Just kind of hit the highlights for those people that might have some fantasy questions out there. We'll start in Tampa Bay at Panthers, that wonderful Thursday night football game where Winston and company look bleak. Cam Newton's banged up, and we'll start right with that. And when I made this outline last night, the news of Tuesday has not dropped yet, but Cam Newton is not practicing. The team is basically saying he re-aggravated his foot injury, and we're just going to see, like, play it as it goes. We have no timetable for this. It's going to be, we're going to wait till he's healthy, but we don't know when that's going to be. It doesn't sound great. What's your thoughts on this situation? Like, let's kind of group it with the Panthers offense as a whole. If Cam Newton's out, you got Kyle Allen coming in to play quarterback. You still have the weapons there. What's your thoughts on a fantasy perspective?
Well, first of all, with Cam, I don't know if he re-aggravated or if it's been bugging him all along. I mean, the guy only has 5 rushing attempts on the season. So it's obviously been bugging him, you know, an injury that he suffered in the preseason this year. Yes, maybe he re-aggravated a little bit worse, but it's obviously been bugging him. And here's what scares me about Cam. If this foot doesn't get healthy and it bothers him all season long, he's a career 59.6% completion percentage quarterback, less than 60%. And if he's not going to be able to rush for those 600-700 yards and 6 to 9 rushing touchdowns that he has, I fear he is going to be a fantasy wasteland this year when it comes to that. So I guess it kind of depends on his health. I think McCaffrey is still going to be fine with this injury. And their weapons, I think, are dynamic enough, especially with the DJ Moore and the Curtis Samuel, that they can still, you know, find ways to get them the ball, regardless of whether it's Cam and Kyle Allen. So I think their value might take a little bit of a hit. But Cam, I'm really worried about it. If you drafted him as your quarterback one and you don't have a quarterback two or a strong quarterback two, you might want to look to the waiver wire.
Yeah, I was, I've had multiple people ask me, even going into, like, right after Thursday night, like, would you drop Cam Newton for Josh Allen? And I'm like, yeah, I probably would. Cause, like, I am, like, seriously concerned. Like you said, I don't think he was ever healthy. I don't know if it was his foot. I think it was his foot. It seemed like he's not rushing, but maybe he's still kind of favoring his shoulder. He didn't want to take the contact. I have no idea. But he did not look right either week. It looked bad at times. So I'm with you there. I think it's going to be really interesting. And this could, if the Panthers are smart, they wait a while until he's completely healed. But we know how that plays out in the NFL these days. So we'll kind of wait and see there. You hit on CMC. He's going to be fine. This was one of the weirdest play calling games I've ever seen when it came to Christian McCaffrey this last week. Did not understand how they used him at all. The last question for the Panther side of this that I have for you, though, is Greg Olsen. Out of nowhere, this is going to be an easy answer here. He went 6 catches for 110 yards. He looked good, but he also looked kind of old and beat up at the same time. It was weird. But, you know, if there's a young quarterback coming into play, wants a little safety valve, Olsen's on a lot of waiver wires. How does the guy like Greg Olsen stack up to you right now?
Well, I agree. I think he is definitely a guy that you need to look at the waiver wire, especially with, you know, people like O.J. Howard underproducing with Hunter Henry hurt. There's a lot of question marks at the tight end position. So I think not that he has the upside of some tight ends, but I think Greg Olsen is definitely a guy that, you know, you could see on a week to week basis. He's had 9 targets in each of the first 2 weeks. And we mentioned I mentioned DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel. One thing Ron Rivera and Norv Turner probably aren't necessarily known for is creativity. So maybe those guys do take a little bit bigger of a hit than even I mentioned before. But they do like to throw to the tight end. So I think he will be a fine waiver wire replacement if you need it, or kind of that low end tight end one, high end quarter or tight end two that you could use on a pretty regular basis.
I like it. Yeah. No, there's something, as long as he's out there, he's going to be giving it to you as all. Like, he basically broke his nose, put some tampons in it, and he went right back out there. He was ready to roll. So no fear in Greg Olsen. On the Bucs side of things, there's a lot of question marks in that offense. I don't want to get into all of them. But I think the biggest one that had fantasy owners just grasping for, you know, jumping on bridges at times on Thursday night is O.J. Howard. Where was O.J. Howard? That was the question many had. What level of concern do you have there? Because, like, Bruce Arians is laughing about it right now, going, oh, he'll get the balls. But it's like, we haven't seen it for 2 weeks. Arians has not been a tight end guy in the past. Are you concerned with O.J. Howard right now?
I'm very concerned, and here's why. You mentioned it. Bruce Arians has never been a tight end guy, and you got to kind of ask yourself, has he not been a tight end guy because he has not had the talent at the tight end position, and he's crafted his offense in other ways, or is it because he's just a guy that doesn't like to feature the tight end in his offense? And so he doesn't necessarily work to get guys like O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate involved in his game plan. So after 2 games, I'm kind of worried that it's kind of the latter, where Bruce Arians is just not a guy that likes to feature the tight end, you know, with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, and then 2 tight ends to kind of split the work. I'm really concerned going back to his days in Arizona. You know, I thought it was because he had guys like Ricky Seals-Jones and Rob Housler and Jermaine Gresham, and you know, even Heath Miller had a few good years, but all the way back to 2014, he's had 3 tight ends that have hit the 700 yard mark, and they were Heath Miller in 3 of his 8 seasons. So I do worry about him, and it's not like you can sell him right now because he's probably at an all-time low. I think what you can hope is he has a good week or two and then maybe move him. So I'm very worried about O.J. Howard.
Yeah, and then that's the biggest thing is you can't just drop him right now, and the value is not worth selling him for. But you got to hope maybe this week when they flow into against the Giants, who can never cover a tight end. Hope he has a monster game and he can flip him or something. That's what you got to hope for. All right, let's head over to the Cardinals-Ravens. A 6-point Ravens victory, close game, but maybe the score doesn't show everything that took place there. As Lamar Jackson, you know, got it done on the ground and through the air. Mark Andrews did his thing, but Kyler Murray and that passing game was still very dynamic. We'll get to that in a minute. But Steve, what's your thoughts on Lamar Jackson? We saw him take care of a very bad Dolphins team a week ago. This past weekend, he takes care of a Cardinals team that doesn't play great defense, moves at a super high tempo. But now he's going to be heading into Kansas City. He's going to be facing a tougher schedule going forward. What's your thoughts? What's your expectations on Lamar Jackson?
I think Lamar Jackson has the potential to be a top 5 quarterback at the end of the season. Fantasy quarterback, I guess I should say. I love what they've done. They've surrounded him with good weapons. You know, if you have a quarterback that maybe struggles with accuracy, at least that was his reputation. He's looking pretty good so far as far as accuracy goes this year. But you give him a guy like Marquise Brown, who can do a lot of damage after the catch. He can either stretch the field or catch the short slant and do his damage after. They give him a guy like Miles Boykin, who's got a big catch radius, who can go up and get the ball. I love what they've done from weapons, and then we all know what he can do with his legs. So I really like Lamar Jackson. I don't really care the matchup because I think he can beat defenses with his legs and move the ball on just about anyone, in my opinion. So I think he's got a potential to finish as a top 5 or even top 3 fantasy quarterback this season.
I love it. I love it. It'd be great to see that happen because he's not just a running back, folks. Not bad for a running back to be a top 5. Quarterback. In that same matchup, we saw Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, who in the Miami game only played like 14 snaps. Everyone was concerned, still had some crazy, crazy plays, but the whole argument was he can't do it on such a short workload. This past week, he gets 13 targets, still doesn't have a ton of snaps, but obviously more than the 14 before. It seems like he's not the full-time guy, but when he's out there, Lamar loves him. From a fantasy perspective, how much do you like Marquise Brown? How much do you trust Marquise Brown on a week-to-week basis?
I like Marquise Brown as an NFL wide receiver. He scares the hell out of me on a weekly basis from a fantasy perspective. So if you look at DFS, he is definitely a DFS tournament GPP play. I would not touch him in cash lineups. So he's going to be one of those guys like, Deshaun Jackson in the past, where he goes off one week and then he disappears another. I think we're going to see that several times throughout the season. That said, as an NFL wide receiver, I love what he can do. And I think he's going to be very good for years to come.
I like it. Last piece on the Ravens real quick. Mark Andrews had a monster game, 8 catches, 112 and a touchdown. It's back-to-back big weeks. He seems like the guy that Lamar Jackson wants to go to early and often. If you had to just kind of guess or kind of put your spin on it, where do you see Mark Andrews kind of fitting into the realms of tight ends by season's end? Is he the fifth-best tight end? Is he better than fifth? Like, where do you see Andrews finishing things out?
I'm scared to put him in the top five. That being said, I really like him, and I think he'll definitely finish in the top 10, but I think he's more in that kind of 6 to 9 range, and I don't necessarily think he'll push the top five. And maybe it's because I'm still a Hunter Hurst guy, or a Hayden Hurst, excuse me. And I think that he's going to get more involved as the season comes along, and so will Miles Boykin, in my opinion. They got a lot of youth on that team, and I think they're all going to have their share in the offense. So I like Mark Andrews. I think he'll finish in the top 10. I'm not ready to project him to finish in the top five this year, though.
All right, let's flip over to the Arizona side of things. Kyler Murray, once again, had big, big fantasy production. From a play-by-play standpoint, might not have been the most efficient, but the bits I got to see, the Ravens were all over him. He looked a lot better than he stood in that pocket, and he made plays. He forced it to DJ, or no, not to DJ, to Fitzgerald, to Kirk. They're getting over 20% target share each. Like, they're getting so much. It's crazy. So this receiving core between Murray, Fitz, Kirk, do you believe they can keep this up? Like, I guess it's hard not to believe it, but do you believe that this is what we're going to see time and time again, and you're getting a steal like where you drafted Kirk and Fitz in your drafts this year?
I do. Right now, he's the quarterback 13 in fantasy, which he was drafted maybe a little bit higher than that. I've seen him go anywhere that 9, 10, down to 13, 14 range. But look, he struggled for roughly three quarters against the Lions, and then he really came on strong at the end of the game and in overtime, and then he looked pretty good against the Ravens. Now, the Ravens had a few injuries in the secondary, but look, he's a quarterback 13 already, was struggling for three of the 8 quarters that he's played in, which were the first 3 quarters, and he hasn't even really shown what he can do with his feet yet, which I think he will add, a decent amount of rushing yards this year as well. So you throw in Fitz and Kirk, which I'll be honest, I was one of the guys that was lower on Christian Kirk going into the season than most, partly because he's kind of that natural slot receiver where Larry Fitzgerald is playing right now. I figured it'd be another year until Fitzgerald goes that he really hits his true stride. But I think with Fitzgerald and Kirk there, Kyler Murray improving all the time, I think that offense is going to be pretty darn good this season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they're going to surprise some people. Like I said, this Ravens game was a lot closer than I think a lot of people thought. The Cardinals actually looked good. Like, they had 3 field goals in the first 3 quarters, and it's almost, and they're 4th and short. If they were just a little more aggressive, who knows what could have happened. It could have been real interesting. So Cardinals will be fun to watch the rest of the way. Let's go Steelers, Seahawks. Steelers lose by 2. More importantly, they've lost Big Ben for the year. Tommy John surgery. No, this is not a baseball podcast of Bench with Bubba, folks. This is football. Tommy John surgery for Big Ben. So insert Mason Rudolph, who they drafted out of Oklahoma State, big-time quarterback. What's your thoughts going forward now with Rudolph at the helm in Pittsburgh?
Well, first, before I even say what I'm going to do that, I'm going to apologize in advance because it's only a matter of time. I'm in a hotel room right now, and this chair that I'm on is wobbly, I won't say it, but AF. And so if you hear a big crash and then a big moan, leave that in the show because it will be good entertainment because it's only a matter of time before I fall off out of this chair. Let's get to the part with Mason Rudolph. You know, he was a third-round pick. It's not like this guy was an undrafted free agent or low-round pick. He, you know, I've been in Devy leagues for several years, and there were some pretty high expectations for him in the college ranks that people thought he would be a pretty darn good pro. So in the preseason, he looked to gel pretty well with James Washington, and with Dante Moncrief struggling like he is, I think he's even technically been – or officially been benched. I'm not sure. He probably should be if he isn't been officially. But I think James Washington is a guy that I think you should add in, you know, kind of standard size leagues. And we saw him hit Vance McDonald for, you know, two touchdowns late in the game after Big Ben went out. And what does a quarterback without a lot of experience like? They like that safety valve over the middle of the field. And so I think Vance McDonald actually gets a little bit of a boost with Mason Rudolph in there. So I think Mason Rudolph gives Vance McDonald and James Washington a boost. Juju might get a slight drop, but he still will get his. But the rest of them, you know, the other wide receivers, I'm you know, you got to kind of take a pass on.
Yeah, so even, like, I agree with the Moncrief take. He needs to be gone. I think he got, after he dropped one of the early passes with Rudolph, hit off his helmet, got picked off. He went to the sidelines. James Washington came out there. James Washington and Rudolph went to college together. They played together. They had a rapport in preseason together. Do you have any interest in a guy like that, or do you want to stick with your, it's Juju, it's Vance, and then the running back situation of Pittsburgh?
I'll take a flyer on James Washington. And in a 12-team league, as long as, you know, I have a spot, I'm looking to add James Washington because, you know, he's that big play potential guy, kind of that deep threat, and he could hit a home run for you on certain weeks. So not that I'm necessarily going to look to add him into my flex spot right away, but you're always looking to kind of churn that bottom part of your roster and see if you can improve it. And he's got the potential to be a home run hitter. So I'm definitely looking to add James Washington in kind of those standard 12 team leagues.
No doubt about it. Just for some news for people, James Conner hurt his knee, supposed to play Sunday. So keep an eye on that one. On the Seahawks side of things, Russell Wilson threw for 300 yards, threw the ball like 35 times, which is big for them. Like, one of the first questions I have here, we loved Chris Carson after week one because he was the bell cow. He still had a heavy workload this week, but Rashard Penny also had 10 carries and was a part of the passing game. Do you have any level of concern here when it comes to Penny and Carson now? And it looked like Carson was the standalone guy.
You know, I do. I think Penny could work his way in, and maybe it's because, you know, we've seen Chris Carson put the ball on the ground in each of the first two games. And so fumbles are one way to get a running back his butt on the bench. And so I think that could be the one thing. If he doesn't get those ball control issues under control, I could see Rashad Penny gain some steam and traction in this offense. Penny is an explosive guy. I remember watching him on the, I don't know if it was Thursday night or Sunday night or Monday night football. I remember I was in a hotel room again one night watching it he didn't have any carries, but man, this guy is just so explosive. I do kind of worry. Don't get me wrong. I think in the short term, Chris Carson is going to be fine. If you see him put the ball on the ground though, I am very concerned about him throughout the course of the season, keeping his workload intact.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. It's always the one way to get a running back put on the bench. That is 100% true. So it'll be interesting. I'm a big Chris Carson fan, but I did not like seeing that this early in the season. When it comes to the receivers, though, Tyler Lockett, I was a big fan on coming into the season. Week one was not what we expected. Week two, though, 10 catches for 79. DK Metcalf, still a very important piece of that offense. We know it's a team that wants to run the ball a lot, Steve. But what's your thoughts on Lockett and Metcalf going forward? Do you think, you know, they're maybe a week-to-week matchup deal, or is there actually viability in these guys?
I think there's viability in Lockett. I think Metcalf being a rookie and being kind of that big play threat, he might be a little bit more volatile. I would still, I probably wouldn't bench Lockett right now. He'd be in my lineup every week. Even if they don't throw a lot, I think those two would be the ones. I'm not necessarily sold on Will Disley and, you know, other guys that they have out there. He had two touchdowns this week, but that's not going to happen every week. So I think they're still going to have at just enough volume that Lockett will still be, you know, get his for fantasy. DK Metcalf might be one of those guys you consider on a flex play each week, depending on the matchup. And so I'm not necessarily a must start, but I'm going to say I'd probably have him in my lineup more than I wouldn't the rest of the season. But the rest of them, no, in that passing game, I'm staying away from all of them, including Will Disley.
Yeah, I'm glad you hit that Disley question, because I try to be nice to people when they ask questions, but I'm like, guys, don't do it. Just don't, please. It's not worth it. Let's go to the Cowboys at the Redskins. I'm a big fan of this Cowboys offense. I preached it after week one. This passing attack, Kellen Moore, they took the play calling role away from the Ginger, and it's showing. It's very, very nice what Kellen Moore is doing there. We'll start with Dak. Continues to just be great. I think I read like a 72% completion percentage, which is just wild times. But Zeke got his. Zeke ate this past week. I think people can relax there. Michael Gallup. Gallup out, had his knee scoped. He's out 2 to 4 weeks. What's your expectations with the receiving core there? Because Cooper looks great. Zeke's going to get his in the running of the passing game. Smith made an impact. You have Cobb. Who do you think kind of fills in for Gallup while he's out?
I think it's going to be Devin Smith, and we kind of saw that this week. I mean, he only had 3 targets, but 3 catches for 74 with a touchdown. He's another guy that I still remember. He was my first ever Devy League pick when they graduated into the NFL. My first ever rookie pick. He was a, a third round pick, I think it was, or second round pick for the Jets out of Ohio State back in 2015. The guy's got a lot of talent, never really shown it with the Jets. We all know what their quarterback struggles have looked like for the Jets for the last few years, so I don't necessarily all blame it on them. Amari Cooper will still get his. I think Randall Cobb might see a slight uptick, and I'm not ready to add Devin Smith quite yet. But he's definitely on my watch roster. Maybe in deeper leagues, like 15 or 16 team leagues, I think I would probably put a flyer on him. 12 team, he's just on my watch list. But he's a guy that I think could fill in well while we see Michael Gallup out.
Nice. On the Redskins side of things, it's another week where, you know, Trey Quinn's getting the workload but not the production. On the flip side, Terry McLaurin, people, you know, waiver wire darling going into last week, he was goose-egging it in the first half. Second half, though, finishes with 562 and a score. Are we still in on McLaurin? The air yards are through the roof with this guy, so it seems like, you know, they're going to want to keep getting on the rock. Are we going to keep buying into him each week?
We are. I mean, this guy, you know, he was one of the quietest third-round draft picks in recent history, in my opinion anyways. And being a Lions fan, I'm always a big fan of the NFL draft, just because that's the one thing that a Lions fan has to look forward to every year is the NFL draft, because we always pick high. But anyways, look, this guy was kind of a combine hero. Ran a 4.3 5.40 in college in this draft class coming in. He was first in yards per target with 14.3 yards per target in the NCAA last season. Caught 71% of his targets, which was ninth in the draft class. The guy, he has some talent. They don't have many weapons there to throw to. So, yeah, I think he's going to be, you know, I would probably feel pretty confident leaving him in my lineup every week. That being said, I do think you mentioned Trey Quinn. They have Chicago coming up this week, and usually they have Buster Screen guard their slot receivers. So he could be a sneaky play this week as well. It's more of a desperation play, but keep an eye on him this week across the middle for Washington against Chicago as well.
I like it. I like it a lot. Trey Quinn's got the talent. He just hasn't put it all together yet, but he could be interesting. Him and Chris Thompson, just underappreciated fantasy assets in Washington because it's the Redskins.
Absolutely.
Let's go to we'll just talk real quickly on this bloodbath. It'll be the weekly why do we talk about the Dolphins game segment, because we have to, because there's so much fantasy relevance when the other team beats them to a pulp. But the Patriots now with Antonio Brown on the field, love them or hate them, and most of us hate them for obvious reasons, we still got to deal with them in a fantasy aspect. He goes off, catches 4 of 8 targets, still goes 56 in a score. Gordon had some fun. Amendola kind of got, you know, out of the mix there a little bit. They have a slew of running backs. Always a ton of options in New England. If Antonio, and that's a big if, week to week pretty much, if he's in there and you have Antonio, Amendola, and Gordon every week, it's a defensive nightmare, but it's also a fantasy player's nightmare, Steve. How do you approach this on a week-to-week basis? This is It's like the old days with, you know, the Saints. It's miserable. It was tough to do.
Well, and I would say this. I was one of the biggest Antonio Brown fans that there was. I'm a CMU Chippewa. He's a CMU Chippewa. Went to the same university. Of course, not at the same time. I graduated just a few years before him. But I got to be honest, this guy has lost his freaking mind. Yep. And so it's hard to be a fan of him the way that he's kind of self-destructed over the past, oh, I'd say, what, 8 months since the end of last season. But anyways, here's what I think. I think he's going to hurt Josh Gordon the most. I think Edelman's still going to get his across the middle of the field. He's still far Brady's go-to guy. So I think Edelman will still be good on a weekly basis. I don't think we're going to see much decrease in his value. But those that drafted Josh Gordon, you know, once the news of his reinstatement, when I was at the Kings Classic prior to the season drafting in Canton, Ohio at the Hall of Fame, it was right after the news of Josh Gordon's reinstatement into the league came up, and he got bumped up into the fourth or fifth round of the snake draft. And honestly, that's where he was for most of the rest of the preseason after that news. And I think with Antonio Brown going to New England, he's the one that's going to be affected the most. So, yeah, I do worry if you drafted Josh Gordon. I think right now he's kind of in flex play consideration, whereas before you could almost look at him as a wide receiver two, maybe three, but he's definitely in flex play consideration right now.
Yeah, no, I was a big Gordon guy. I was taking him in early drafts before he was reinstated, going like super late, going, I'm going to take the gamble. It's Josh Gordon. And then when he got reinstated, I was doing backflips, which it says a lot for a guy my size to do backflips. That's pretty agile on my feet, if you know what I mean. So yeah, that was, I was pretty pumped on it. And then the second they got Antonio, people were asking me why I was so angry. And it was pretty simple. But, you know, Gordon will have his games here and there, but like you said, it's hard to just trust him in your lineup outside of like a flex wide receiver three. So we'll see how that goes. Well, Bills Giants, nothing too crazy. Josh Allen's actually really freaking good, contrary to people's beliefs. John Brown and him like each other a lot. That's pretty self-explanatory for now. But let's just talk about the elephant in the room that finally happened this morning on a Tuesday morning. Eli Manning has been benched. And it is the Daniel Jones season. It is happening. Daniel Jones is the starting quarterback. Looks good in preseason. People were kind of sketchy about where he got drafted. What's your thoughts on this Giants offense now? You know, you still have Saquon. Shepard will be back sooner than later. Ingram's there. What's your thoughts there with Daniel Jones at the helm now for potentially 14 more weeks?
I think it's only going to give a bump in value to guys like Sterling Shepard and Golden Tate, in my opinion. Eli Manning has never been a high completion percentage quarterback. This year he's at 62%, 62.9, but he's throwing for a career low, tied for career low, 9.9 yards per completion. Now, part of that is because the weapons that they have, they don't have the Odell Beckhams and things like that. So the weapons they have, the Sterling Shepherds and the Evan Ingrams and even Saquon Barkley, aren't going to be running a lot of long routes. So part of that comes into play, but I think Daniel Jones is going to be able to stretch the field a little bit more. I think he definitely can't necessarily be worse than Eli Manning. So I think Golden Tate is a guy that if he's not owned in your leagues, I'd definitely scoop him up. For the potential of what could happen with Daniel Jones in there. Shepard, his concussion scares me a little bit because you never know with head injuries. But that being said, just about every year, Sterling Shepard outproduces his average draft position. He's a PPR golden boy, in my opinion, and I love Sterling Shepard. So I'm going to try to buy low on both of those guys.
Yeah, when we get to the end, we're going to recap all the new quarterbacks we have this week and kind of rank them out, how we feel about them. But there's an interesting group we get to talk about here later, and I agree. I think Daniel Jones, he can't hurt them. Like, it can't get worse. So you might as well try it. It just surprises me if they're going to do this so soon. Why did you even start the year with Eli Manning? That's the part I can't quite understand, but I don't get paid to sit in a front office. I just get paid to talk about him on a microphone on my computer. So that's where we go on that one. Jaguars, Texans, not the most eventful football game until the end when I'll give Doug Marrone some credit for some cojones going for two for the W. I'm a big fan of that when you're not expected to win and you have a chance to win and walk away with the win. I like that. The first question I have, besides just wearing amazing outfits, stretching in his jock strap before the games, Gardner Minshew is a legend. People don't really all they're seeing is this stuff on Twitter now, but they don't remember him from college. Like, he was actually really good at Washington State. Before he went to Washington State, Alabama wanted him to be their backup. So if you're good enough to be Bama's backup, you're not just a scrub. Like, you're not great because you're not the starter, but you're not a scrub. Look at Jalen Hurts. He was the backup, and now he's torching Oklahoma. So Minshew is not like a scrub. He's not an elite, but he's not a scrub. He had 213 yards, a touchdown, 56 yards on the ground. Not a great game, but not horrible. What's your take on Gardner Minshew going forward? Because Foles can be out for a little while.
Well, you know what? The kid's got moxie. I like it. Yes. Like you said, he's got a track record, not necessarily in the NFL, but, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars defense is no joke. And so he held his own. You know, I mentioned it with Chris Carson earlier, putting the ball on the ground. He did fumble the ball three times in this game. So that is a little bit of a concern, but look, it looks like he's going to be their quarterback for the foreseeable future. One thing I like about this team is, for a young quarterback, they have a lot of different weapons for him, so he doesn't have to rely on that, forcing the ball to that one number one receiver and try to put it in a tight window. With, you know, the guys like D.D. Westbrook and D.J. Chark and Marquise Lee coming back, and, you know, they got a bunch of guys that are all kind of the same, and I like that for a young quarterback because it gives them options. So yeah, I do like Gardner Minshew, and I think, you know, this week isn't necessarily an indicator of what he's going to be over the next coming weeks. I think he will be a better fantasy quarterback than we saw against Jacksonville.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think he's gonna be very, very good. So I don't mind that at all. On the Texans side of things, after week one, everyone loved Duke Johnson. Well, that was a pass heavy game in New Orleans. This past week was slower when they can run the ball. Carlos Hyde had 20 carries. It was a Jekyll and a Hyde situation, no pun intended, but it really was. And I'm afraid we're going to see that a lot this year. So if you buy into that, then yes. If not, tell me I'm wrong and explain. But if you buy into that, it's going to be kind of a week-to-week, you know, game flow system. How do you approach these guys on your fantasy team?
I think if someone out there spent a fourth or fifth round pick on Duke Johnson, they're going to be disappointed, like I mentioned before, with whatever player it was. I can't even remember. But anyways, you know, he's been outrushed by Carlos Hyde, 30 rushing attempts to 15 already. And where Duke gets a lot of his value is in the receiving game, and he's only got 6 targets on the season so far. So I think the addition, bringing in Kenny Stills, you know, they got DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller is healthy now this year. Kiki Kuti is coming, came back. And so they have a lot of options. So he's not necessarily going to be used in the passing game like I thought he would be. And I think Carlos Hyde is going to get more play in the rushing game. So I think if you're in standard leagues, non-PPR, I think Carlos Hyde's going to be the guy to own. I think PPR is still Duke Johnson's game, but I think he's going to be disappointing this season.
Yeah, I've always been a big Duke fan, but like I told people, I liked him when I drafted him as like my running back 4 and I knew what his role was. Now it's just kind of like, no, this isn't the Duke Johnson role we used to play. This is a different guy. So it's kind of tough there. And yeah, it's going to be a long year. It's almost like if you know it's going to be a high-octane game to play Duke, if not, probably not playing him that week.
Yeah, and that's the bad part with Houston is you could have a high-octane game, but there's not going to be many games where they're big underdogs or falling from behind a lot, which is the game script that you need for a Duke Johnson game. So because they're too good of a team for that. So yeah, it's a little scary for him.
Yeah, and would you be interested in picking up a guy like Carlos Hyde?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not necessarily as much in PPR leagues. I'd still probably pick him up. Don't get me wrong. 30 rushing attempts through the first two games is definitely worth putting on your roster. Just don't expect a lot of production from him in the receiving game.
Would you rather have Carlos Hyde or Frank Gore?
Carlos Hyde. I'm not a Frank Gore guy. I think he's just a placeholder right now for Devin Singletary.
I agree with you there. Carlos Hyde or Adrian Peterson?
That's a good one. I think I'd probably rather have Adrian Peterson, but that one is a tough one. Man, that's close.
That's close. It's close because you could see the Redskins falling behind a lot just throwing it to Chris Thompson, where it's the opposite in Houston. So that's the problem there. Yeah. All right, let's head to Detroit. Chargers squeak one out on the Lions squeak one out on the Chargers. Chargers had their chances. Somehow, like, their coach should have been fired when you don't have a kicker and you don't get a kicker during the week, you say, screw it, my punter can do it. Obviously, the punter can't do it. That was established this week. But one thing we did see when it came to the San Diego Chargers, Austin Eckler is a workhorse. Keenan Allen's going to get tons of targets. That is in the books. Enjoy it. Have fun. Let's go to the Lions side of things. And as a Lions fan, you have a little more maybe feel on this. TJ Hockenson, monster week one, pretty much disappears week two. Which TJ Hockenson do we think we'll see more often this season?
That's a good question. And I go back and forth on that, because if Patricia holds true and tries to follow, you know, kind of the New England format, I think the tight end will play a big role in it. But we've seen rookie tight ends struggle to find consistency in the NFL. So here's what I like about Hockenson is the guy is not only a good receiver, but he's a really good blocker as well. You know, he had a big week one, not as big of a week two, but he was still on the field for more snaps. He was on the field for 71% of the snaps in week one and 79% of the snaps in week two. He just didn't have necessarily the role in the receiving game that he did in week one. I like him. You can't expect week one production, but here's why I like him more like the week one TJ Hockenson than the week two, because I think this Lions team is going to be playing from behind more than they aren't this season. Yes, they're 1-0-1. You mentioned it. I think LA kind of shot themselves in the foot. They should have won that game more than, you know, what the outcome showed. I think this Detroit team is putting on a mirage right now, and they're not that good. And I think they're going to be passing the ball a lot. So while I don't expect week one production every week, I think he's going to be more the week one producer than he is the week two producer.
What we saw from Kenny Golladay this last week, everyone's been wanting to see that kind of production out of him. Do you think we get this more consistently? Because in the past, you had Marvin Jones, Tate, and Golladay. It kind of got a little murky at times. Tate's out of the way. Jones really hasn't done much the first 2 weeks. Golladay finally exploded. Do we think we start getting more like Stafford to Golladay connection out there, almost like Stafford and Megatron?
I do. I really think that Kenny Golladay is going to be that stud wide receiver. I am not going to put him in the same category as Kelvin Johnson, though. I don't think you could put many wide receivers in that same category. But I do think that he is going to, you know, meet or exceed his ADP where he was being drafted. So, yeah, I think Kenny Golladay, his role is cemented in this offense, and he's going to be good for the course of the season.
Nice. Let's head over to Niners at Bengals. Niners beat down in Cincinnati, 41-17. It was a thing of beauty. Garoppolo wasn't like, if you really look at his play-by-play, wasn't pretty, but 297 for three touchdowns and a pick looks great. That's always awesome. They ran it down their throat. Breida had 120. Mostert had a big game. Jeff Wilson had two touchdowns. How do you approach this three-headed monster? Because I was frustrated because Breida was, you know, 12 for 121. He'd bust out big plays. They'd put him on the bench to rest, and then other guys would get touchdowns. So I'm trying to tell people to calm down on Breida. But Mostert was very good. Wilson's a good goal line, bigger guy. What are you doing with this three-headed monster that the Niners are having on a team where, you know, Shanahan has no problem using multiple backs?
Well, and I think that's what you mentioned. He doesn't have any problem showing going back to his Atlanta days with the, you know, the Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman splitting the work. And that's a guy that we didn't even mention right now, Tevin Coleman, who is out right now, but he'll be back before too long. So I think when he comes back, Jeff Wilson will be removed. But there were a lot of people higher on Matt Breida. I think this is going to be a full-blown running back by committee. Right now, it's three. I think Breida and Mostert would be two that I would consider for flex plays right now. I don't necessarily feel good about it, but I think when Tevin Coleman comes back, man, it gets even murkier. So this whole running back situation from a fantasy perspective scares me, because, look, Mostert had 13 carries, Breida had 12, and Wilson had 10. You're not going to have that guy get, you know, 20 carries and the next one get six. I just don't think we're going to see it in a Kyle Shanahan system. So on a weekly basis, we're going to see a lot of muddled running backs in the system.
If Mostert's available right now, would you rather have him or Carlos Hyde?
I think Carlos Hyde, because I like his outlook for the rest of the season. Whereas I think Mostert, while Tevin Coleman is out, might outproduce him a little bit. I think over the course of the season, Hyde will be the better fantasy producer.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think that's a very good call. Matt Breida or Duke Johnson?
Oh, boy, I think I'm going to – oh, geez. I think I'm going to go Breida. I think I'm going to go Breida because I think he's going to have a bigger role in this offense that Duke will on a weekly basis with Houston.
With this Niners, you know, we're already confused like with so many options in the running game. The passing game has lots of options as well, including Deebo Samuel, who was a big-time draft pick. People were excited to have him come over here. And he had a monster game, big second half, 5 catches for 87 and a score, had a nice preseason. Garoppolo's still kind of getting back in the game, so it's only his second game back, a real game back since his ACL injury. There's a lot to like with Deebo Samuel, but there are like Marquise Goodwin and George Kittle's obviously there. Kittle hasn't had a monster game yet. Are you buying in that Deebo Samuel can be that number one, like consistent fantasy receiver on the Niners?
He will probably, if I had to guess, lead the team in wide receiver yards. But that said, from a fantasy perspective, I am not high on him at all. I would actually kind of try to look to see if I had a 49ers fan. You know, Ryan Hallam, my partner over at Fighting Chance, is a 49ers fan. I'd try to trade him to him if I could, just because you mentioned it. I think Goodwin will still have his role. I still don't know what the hell's going on with Dante Pettis. He did play. Yeah, I mean, wow. He was on the field for 2 snaps in week 1. He did get on the field for 35 snaps in week 2, so almost half the snaps he was. But look, Trent Taylor still hasn't been playing, and he's going to be coming back. They got another rookie, Jalen Hurd, who looked really good early on. So I think they're going to spread the ball around. And I think that if you got a guy that needs wide receiver help, I think I would be looking to move Deebo Samuel. So I think he might still lead the team in receiving yards for receivers. I'm not going to include Kittle in there. But that said, I don't think he's going to be a very good fantasy option in year one because of all the other weapons.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. There's just a lot of moving parts there, and Shanahan does not care about your fantasy team. It's very, very clear.
And he should. He should. I don't know why he doesn't.
If he knew it was right,
I'll write him a letter and send it to him.
You should. And I'm going to have all my Niner buddies out here say something when they go on Sunday to watch that game because, you know, they have built-in Wi-Fi into the stadium for a reason. Check your fantasy scores. He should be supporting you on this one.
Are your Niners buddies, are they expecting big numbers out of Deebo Samuel this year?
They love him. I think they're just drunk on the fact that they're 2-0 and they looked really good this last weekend. I don't think they really know what to expect. I think they are kind of surprised Breida's not the guy and are kind of worried Kittle hasn't gone off. But this last Sunday was a day where they were just running around. If they could run around naked, they would have. They were happy.
Yeah, awesome.
So it wasn't the prettiest of games, but Andy Dalton still gets it done. Boyd and Ross have been super consistent both weeks. Awesome 1 and 2s, both wide receiver ones, basically, in fantasy football. New offensive coordinator. Do we think we can trust this on a week-to-week basis the rest of the way? Because the Bengals' offense has always been kind of a murky situation, but right now they look like they have a whole new identity that's a lot of fun for the fantasy world.
Well, absolutely, because no more Marvin Lewis, and probably the most conservative head coach in the NFL, in my opinion. It could be debatable, but the guy wasn't big into taking chances. And so far, we Zach Taylor has definitely looked to get his playmakers involved. So, yeah, absolutely. John Ross has been a big surprise this year. But if you're going to be a team that struggles, put the ball in the hands of your biggest playmakers, and John Ross is that guy. Now, what's going to happen with him once A.J. Green comes back? We know Tyler Boyd can still have fantasy production while A.J. Green is there. Can John Ross? I do worry about that. So I think he will struggle to find the targets needed to be the fantasy producer once A.J. Green gets back. So he might be another sell-high candidate right now while he's doing so well. That said, I'm going to enjoy the ride right now, and if I can't trade him, I'll plug him in every week and you know, watch the production.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's been pretty impressive to watch. And as a guy that does a lot of DFS, they've been crushing it over there. So it's been a ton of fun. Vikings, Packers, AFC or NFC North, you know, battle, rivalry action here. The Packers 2-0. That defense looks fierce as heck compared to years past. We'll start on the Packers side of things. Aaron Jones, 23 carries for 116 and a touchdown. Jamal Williams still had a decent workload there, but they really, really used Aaron Jones this week. a lot of us were always complaining when McCarthy wouldn't use Jones. Now LaFleur's there. Are we going to believe that this is the deal, or is this just kind of a game flow situation? Because the first week when it was a low-scoring game, we did not see Aaron Jones.
I am going to believe it. I really think that these younger head coaches are willing to put the ball in the hands of their best playmakers. So I am buying into Aaron Jones. You know, last year, one of the knocks on Aaron Jones that he wasn't as good in pass protection as Jamal Williams. So he came off the field a lot. Pro Football Focus rated him, and I'd have to look. I can't remember how it ended up at the end of the season, but he was just as good or better than Jamal Williams in pass protection as far as PFF is concerned. So I am all for Aaron Jones. He, you know, so far he's outrushed him 36 attempts to only 14 for Jamal Williams, and I think we're going to see more of that. I think Aaron Jones is that low-end running back one, high-end running back two, but I think I'm going to put him in high-end running back one for the rest of the season.
I love it because I'm a big fan of his talent, and I hope that's the case because I think he's too good to be wasted away there. Let's talk about the passing game. Rodgers only had 209 yards. He had two scores. 106 of those yards went to Devontae Adams, who you'd expect to get a heavy workload. But you have MVS, who had a great week one. You had Allison, who scores this week. Jimmy Graham didn't do anything this week. Are you concerned at all with this passing game, or is it just more, you know, the game dictated running in the first week was a defensive battle and, you know, still kind of rushed from the preseason? Is there any level of concern here with this passing game? It looks a little not so flashy these days.
I'm more optimistic than a lot of people that are spelling doom and gloom on, you know, Sirius or other websites and so on. So I think there's going to, one, be a learning curve between Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, the new offense. A lot of people are saying this is going to end in disaster. I don't necessarily think it will. I think both these guys want to win enough that I think it's going to work out. They played Chicago defense and Minnesota defense, who are two defenses that are no joke. You're trying to, so you're playing two good defense and trying to work out chemistry and learn a, you know, the ins and outs of a new head coach. So I think they're going to be fine. I am not nearly as pessimistic as others out there in this Packers wide receiver game.
Yeah, you know, Cheesehead Nation can get really dramatic really quick. So,
as a Lions fan, I've seen them do that a lot. Absolutely.
Yeah, they. That's the one thing I was telling you before the pod, and listeners of the show know I'm a Badger fan, and I'll root for the Packers. Like, I'm a Dolphins fan, but I'll root for the Packers. I've appreciated it. I've never seen anything like it when I'm going to fly out on a Sunday after a Badgers game on Saturday, and you go to Milwaukee to fly out, and you go to sit in a bar before you have to leave, and it advertises, we have the Sunday ticket, and you're like, sweet. Every channel has, every TV has the Packers game on. And if you ask to watch another game, they tell you to leave and go to another bar. So it is a religion unlike any other I have ever seen.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
It's crazy. It's like, well, you advertised it out front, but yep, not during the Packer games. Last piece on this game, you know, Dalvin Cook is a monster. Back-to-back big games. I think he's got another great game coming up this weekend at home against the Raiders. What about the passing game, though? Cousins has looked really not great. I'm not going to say really bad, but really not great these first couple of games. Adam Thielen's kind of been doing his thing. Diggs is okay, but nothing flashy. They're not playing like wide receiver ones. Any level of concern here with the Vikings passing game so far?
Oh, I do. I this is one of the big concerns for me because, you know, last year without Dalvin Cook, the Vikings were sixth in the league in pass attempts per game. And so this year so far, dead last. 21 pass attempts per game that they're doing this year. So I think they want to get the running game established. I think Dalvin Cook is going to be a monster this year, which he already is. Don't get me wrong. I shouldn't say that he's going to be because he's already shown that he can be a great fantasy producer. But I think this is going to be a run-first team. I think the volume is going to be there. So the passing game, I think Cousins owners are going to, you know, struggle. I think, in my opinion, he could be, you know, in one quarterback leagues, I don't think he should be on a roster. In Superflex, I would still play him as my number two, but I wouldn't necessarily feel good about it. So I'm very concerned about their passing game.
Let's have fun with this one. Assuming he can be hurt, but assuming he plays week to week, would you rather have Kirk Cousins or Cam Newton?
I think I would rather go on the upside of Cam Newton. believe it or not. And I am not sold on Cam Newton. So that's not a ringing endorsement for him. But I think I would still rather maybe have his upside than Kirk Cousins right now.
I guess that tells us where Kirk Cousins is at. And I don't blame you at all. Let's go to Oakland. Chiefs beat the Raiders 28-10. Raiders are up 10-0. Chiefs score 28 in the second quarter. Then somehow no one scored in the second half. Just mind-blowing football. It didn't matter, though. Patrick Mahomes still 443 yards, four touchdowns. Robinson had a monster game, 172 yards and two scores. Mecole Hardman had a big game. Watkins, people think, didn't have a big game. Well, he still had 13 targets. It was Kelsey did Kelsey things. That's obvious. So this passing attack right now, because Tyreek's going to be out for a while, you got Watkins, Robinson, and Hardman. Watkins is going to be the guy. But what's your thoughts on this overall? Like these other two, Hardmans and Robinsons, what are their fantasy viabilities to you?
I think I'd feel pretty good playing them on a week-to-week basis. Honestly, DeMarcus Robinson went from being a fantasy nobody to being a guy that all of a sudden should definitely be on rosters and potentially be in starting lineups every week. So he's one of those guys. I think Hardman as well. You know, they drafted him and everyone said he's going to, you know, at least physically, he's a Tyreek Hill clone. We'll see if the production comes along with it. But so far in the early going, we're seeing that he can be good in that system. And I think it all comes down to just seeing how good Patrick Mahomes is. This guy is such a good quarterback that I don't know. They might be able to put me and you in that wide receiver out there, Bubba. And I think we might be able to catch 80, 90 yards. So
it's crazy,
I think whoever they put in there is going to be considered, should be considered to be in your lineups.
It's crazy because he's putting up these numbers. Like at the half, both weeks now, he's had well over 300 yards. It's like if these games were close, he'd be throwing for 600, at least 500. Mm-hmm. These games aren't close in the second half. So he's literally – I'm pretty sure you probably saw it on TV or on Twitter. Week one when he missed the wide open Kelsey because he tried to be cute and he apologized. Like, oh, I'll go buy him dinner. I screwed up on that one. Like he's literally doing stuff half the time just to kind of see what happens. Just because he's like he knows if it gets close, he could just move down the field and do whatever he wants. So it's crazy how talented he is. And somehow there's a team in Chicago that took Mitchell Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes. Just Bears fans sleep on that one.
And the fun part is this week we get to see Patrick Mahomes against Lamar Jackson. How fun is that game going to be to watch?
Like how I know they have their TV rules, but can you start flexing the game right now, please? That needs to be Sunday night primetime. Like
I agree.
Like everybody wants to see that game. And I swear, like I'm assuming CBS will have that. It should probably be Nance and Romo in the booth. So everyone should get that one nationwide. It should be the game of the week. But man, like let people do their errands and family stuff during the day and give me that on Sunday night. Like let me pour a cold one or something, sit on the couch and watch some football.
It is a great endorsement if you don't have the Sunday NFL ticket and you're not going to be able to, you know, get the game in your local market. It's a perfect reason why people should have the Sunday NFL ticket.
Yep, this is the way. And like I've been in and out every year on it because I keep raising that stupid price on it. And it annoys the hell out of me. But then there's stuff like this where, yes, I just buy back in. It is ridiculous. It is a great game to do it. The NFL does it again. In this same game, Damian Williams gets banged up. LeSean McCoy's banged up. We may get Darwin Thompson this weekend. I haven't heard any news. It's Tuesday. We'll get some more news as practices go this week. But you just got to kind of keep an eye on this one. On the Raiders side of things, though, Josh Jacobs, he had 12 carries, 99 yards, one big carry that helped out with that. But he's really not getting the passing game work we thought he would get, especially in a game like this. Are you still good with Josh Jacobs? Because after week one, everyone was in love with Josh Jacobs.
I am, because I think the passing work will come. He's shown that he does have good hands. He can be involved in the passing game while he was in Alabama. And one thing that I love about Josh Jacobs is so far through two games, he's got 12 rushing attempts in the red zone, number one in the NFL. Number two, eight, is tied with Gus Edwards, Ezekiel Elliott, and Sony Michel. So he's got 12. The next closest is eight. That just shows me that they have trust in him. They're not going to give a guy that they don't trust the ball in the red zone that often. So I think he's going to be a big part of this offense. He's going to be a bigger part of the passing game maybe as the season goes on. And maybe he doesn't get the 40 or 50 receptions like maybe I thought he was going to be. Maybe he still gets 30 or 40, but hopefully he makes up for that. And some of those rushing touchdowns that it looks like he might get.
Yeah, and that's a big part there, the red zone touches. You know, there's certain guys that, heck, you know it as a Lions fan, all of a sudden you have guys running, like LeGarrette Blount gets the carries. Like, it's crazy times like that. So definitely options for you there, and we lost you.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, I thought we lost you. Okay, good. We're good. Yeah, so let's go on to Saints at Rams. Rams pull away in this one, 27-9. Well, that's not the story of the game. The story, obviously, Drew Brees, he played high fives with Aaron Donald. Don't play high five with Aaron Donald. That's the moral of the story. Aaron Donald's going to win. He's going to be out having surgery. It's like UCL ligament. It's almost like tearing your ACL in your knee. They're saying he's going to be out at least 6 weeks. We'll see if it's longer. It was bad watching him try to grip a football. Not good at all. So Teddy Bridgewater took over. Kamara was out of the game. Thomas still got his workload. What's your thoughts on Bridgewater going forward? Like, he was a talented guy. People wanted to pay him. The Saints decided to for a reason. Now they have a week to game plan. Are you okay with Bridgewater not completely ruining this high-octane offense?
I worry more about what they're going to do with Taysom Hill as well. And so I worry and I struggle that the offense is going to – that they're going to involve Hill maybe more than they should, and it might cause the offense to lack a little continuity. So I think Michael Thomas is still going to get his. I think Kamara is still going to get his. But I think the collateral damage is going to fall with guys like Jared Cook, Ted Ginn, Traquan Smith. I think those are the guys that are going to probably hurt the most. And so I think it's going to be some rough going. When you go from Drew Brees, who knows the system inside and out, one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the NFL, and we don't necessarily know what we're going to get from Teddy. So I do worry about the secondary guys, but I'm not necessarily concerned about the Kamaras and the Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I'm with you, because even when things went bad, Thomas, I think, had 13 targets with Bridgewater. So not too crazy there. For those sleeping under a rock, Cooper Kupp's knee's okay. Like, what he did was just crazy. Almost had that touchdown that, oh, man, that was wild. But Todd Gurley, this was interesting to me. He had 16 carries, which is nice. But Brown had a heavy workload yet again, especially in the passing game. After Gurley got his touchdown, Gurley was walking around without his helmet a lot. He's kind of doing his thing, and Brown got a ton of carries. Are you concerned with this? Like, you know, they said it wouldn't be the heavy workload in the past, but this is getting closer to 50-50 than 75-25, Steve.
You know, I'm actually not as concerned about that with others as well, because if his knee really has arthritis and is arthritic as they say it could be, I think a limited workload will help keep him fresh. And so when you're trying to make a playoff run in your fantasy football, I would much rather have a fresher, healthier Todd Gurley than a one that's running on fumes and hobbling around with his knee. So look, he's still in the season, has 34 touches to Brown's 18. And even the snap count, 70-28 and 64-36 through the first 2 weeks. You know, he's on the field about two-thirds of the time, getting about two-thirds of the carry. And I think, to me, that's a good ratio to try to keep him healthy through the course of the season. I think what I'd like to see, since this game did get a little bit, I don't want to say out of hand, but the Rams did kind of take control of the game in the third. What's going to happen if a close game or they, you know, where they need him, is he still going to come off the field? I think that will be a key indicator, but right now I'm not necessarily worried about Todd Gurley, and I think it's a good thing that they limit his touches.
No, and those are all valid points. That's a good way of looking at it for sure, because it just looked weird. I was watching that game live, and when Brown was doing his thing after that touchdown, they kept showing the sidelines. And Gurley just didn't look happy not being in the game. It was weird. It just had a weird vibe to it. But maybe that's just playing on the Coliseum in general. Weird vibe.
Let's hope we don't start hearing grumblings. I don't want to hear that at all.
Yeah, I could totally be doing that whole, let's overthink the situation.
We'll be amateur psychologists. What can we talk about psychology and what these players are thinking?
Exactly. I know what these guys are thinking. Multi-million dollar guys. I know what they're thinking. Bears-Broncos. Yeah, the ending of the game was entertaining. It was about what you'd expect from these two teams. Let's just put it that way. Poor execution at the end gives the Bears the 16-14 lead. Some bad officiating as well thrown into it. David Montgomery, little banged up. I believe it's his knee. They think he'll play this weekend, but just keep an eye on that if you own Montgomery, because it was good seeing him get a pretty good workload. in this really slow-paced game. But overall, the Bears' offense didn't look great. All right, so we saw the interesting game, but the question, you know, Emmanuel Sanders got his. Joe Flacco was actually okay. But when it comes to the running back situation in Denver, it was scary because Phillip Lindsay and Royce Freeman, it was basically 50-50. How do you approach this going forward, Steve? Because this is not good for people that really wanted some Phillip Lindsay action this year.
And I think it's going to be that way going forward. Both running backs are looking really good. Lindsay looked like he was running hard. Well, they both looked like they were running hard, but even though that Royce Freeman outproduced him, Lindsay still had some really good runs. A big one called back on holding. They each had 7 targets. So I think with both of them looking good, we're going to see a full-blown running back by committee. And that hurts me because, like, early in the season, I drafted Phillip Lindsay in the Scott Fish Bowl. Well, I think I took him in the 4th round. My 2nd round pick was Andrew Luck. That team is kind of struggling a little bit, but which, by the way, that's a super flex league. That's why I took a quarterback in the 2nd round. But anyways, I think it's going to be a full-blown running back by committee. And if you were like me early in the season and thought Lindsay was going to have a similar role to than he did like he did last year, I think we're going to be a little disappointed.
Yeah, no, it's a shame going forward here. But that whole Broncos team, they need to figure some things out because it's not good right now. Let's go to Sunday Night Football. Eagles, Falcons, everyone was jacked up for this game. And about the first 2/3 of it, not so much. But it kind of got going towards the end. The Eagles are the walking wounded, like everyone heard. They already said DeSean Jackson is going to be out for at least 2 weeks. You know, Wentz was banged up. Wentz and Ertz were banged up. We had Alshon Jeffrey banged up. Many, many things weren't great. But so far, only D-Jax is out. What's your thoughts? You know, if with D-Jax out, Nelson Aguilar has a bigger role. He had a big output there. Are seeing a Whiteside. You had Hollins. A couple other guys could come up and have some big games this week. And in a pretty good matchup against a team I think you know pretty well.
I think the guys to watch, if there's some injuries, like you said, are J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. And I think Dallas Goedert could have a little bit of an increased role as well. And I know he got banged up a little bit as well, if I'm not mistaken. I think those are two guys, specifically if Alshon is out, I think we could see a lot of two tight end sets with Ertz and Goddard. And I think he could definitely be one of those guys that – and here's one of the things that I like to do. And I haven't played as much DFS this year as I have in years past, but on DraftKings – you can put a tight end in your flex, and maybe that's one of those in a tournament lineup. Put Dallas Goedert is one of your flex along with a top tight end. Just, you know, it's going to be a unique lineup, and I think he could be in for a sneaky good week this week.
Yeah, he's got that production. Like, people love him. If Wentz ever went down, Goddard would be like a number one tight end. He'd be in a conversation with the big boys at least. So you never know. You never know. He might get his sooner than later. On the Falcons side of things, Julio's a beast. Calvin Ridley actually was awesome to watch. Ryan really loves him from Calvin Ridley. But for me, it's the running back situation. Devontae Freeman just does not look good right now. It is not pretty at all. Ito Smith outrushed him this past week. What are you doing with Freeman and company?
I'd like to say he's a buy low candidate, but I'm kind of concerned as well. I'm not necessarily, you know, feeling all bubbly about him right now. So I think Ito Smith will have a role in this offense. I'm hoping that he's just getting off to kind of a slow start and he'll start picking it up. If you feel better about him like I do, I think he's a good buy low candidate. But I mean, Ito outsnapped him in week one and still got almost 40% of snaps in week two, 38% of the snaps. And so, I'm a little bit concerned on what his role, and maybe they're worried about injury. And so they're trying to involve Ito a little bit more, like we talked about with Gurley, limit his touches to try to keep him healthy through the season.
Yeah, no, that would be the only thing that makes sense, because I'm watching that and like Ito has like bursts and he runs through holes. Freeman's like running into lines. Like it just looked bad from Freeman. It did not look like the Freeman of old. So I can't wrap my head around it, but it was one of those things that just did not seem right. What also didn't seem right was Monday Night Football. The Jets, you know, you got one quarterback, you know, finally gets to kiss a girl and now he's got mono. Then the Browns come into town and OBJ reminds everybody that he used to run this joint in New York. They win 23-3. Trevor Siemian was backing up Darnold. He gets out for the year. His ankle was in the left stands when his foot was pointing to the right. It was not good. But Luke Falk comes in. And Luke was a another Washington State guy, decent Washington State guy. What's your thoughts on Luke Falk with this offense? Because he actually looked a lot better than Simeon did. He had a little rapport with Robbie Anderson, found Crowder towards the end of the game. He dumped it off to Bell all day long. What's your thoughts on Luke Falk, who almost had 200 yards in his time?
He was a guy that was another kind of Devy darling a few years back that people were kind of surprised when he fell so far in the draft. I don't necessarily think he is as bad as his six-round draft value showed. I think he's a better quarterback than that. I do worry about the weapons, really, with Robbie Anderson and Jamison Crowder. There's not a whole lot to necessarily like in that Jets passing game. So I don't think he's going to do better than Trevor Siemian. We've seen what we got out of Siemian. So I don't think he's going to be as good as Darnold. And you know, we've seen what he was, where he's not necessarily a weekly fantasy starter as well. So I think he's kind of a placeholder right now. I don't have high expectations for him in that offense. And I think Le'Veon Bell is still going to get touch after touch after touch after touch in this offense.
And speaking of Lev Bell, like 21 carries, had so many targets and catches. He was just, it seemed like it was the Le'Veon Bell show. And he's done that for two straight weeks now. We before this last game, he's having MRIs on his shoulder. The workload is crazy. Do you really think he can withstand this? Because if he can, he's going to be a fantasy just gold mine. But it seems like a lot to ask from this guy.
You know, he didn't play last year, so if anyone should be fresh, it should be this guy. I'll give him that. And we've shown that he's shown that he can, you know, get quite a few touches. That being said, he has missed a little bit of time, but. I would like to see them scale it back a little bit, but I guess as a Le'Veon Bell owner in one or two leagues, I think that volume is definitely going to be welcomed right now. but come the playoff time, I do worry that he'll be a little bit wore down, banged up, and not be as good of a producer as he's doing right now.
Yeah, that's my biggest concern. But hey, as long as he's there for the battle between the Jets and the Dolphins, it'll be a doozy.
Exactly.
Last question here on the Browns. You know, they got the job done. Mayfield at 325, Beckham 6 for 161. Chubb found the end zone, but really wasn't a part of the passing game. It was kind of a muddy game, but in the end, everyone got their numbers. You would think they would have done a lot more against this Jets team, but maybe I'm just underestimating the Jets defense. Do you have any concern with this Browns offense, a team that lost to Tennessee at home and then comes into New York, and it really took some kind of big fluky plays to bust this thing open?
You know, Tennessee, I think, is a better defense than what people give them credit for. They looked really good in week one. I think Tennessee's got a good defense, and then going on the road in week two, look, it's early in the season. They're trying to, you know, work on integrating Odell Beckham into this offense. I think there's going to be a little bit of time for them to get some chemistry. We saw it in week two that they definitely started gelling a little bit more. But it's a whole different offense with Odell Beckham in there, and now that Nick Chubb is the guy as well. So I think they're just going to get better. The chemistry is going to get better every week. And no, I'm not worried about the Cleveland Brown offense right now.
Beautiful. Before we go out of here, I mentioned it earlier, we're going to recap these quarterbacks, because now we've got Mason Rudolph, Daniel Jones. We'll throw Gardner Minshew into this since he was fresh from last week. Kyle Allen, potentially in Carolina. Teddy Bridgewater and Luke Falk. For those keeping track at home, it's six potentially new quarterbacks in the first 2 weeks of the season. And I might be missing others. I know that's a hefty list here. Who are the ones you'd be targeting the most this week out of that list?
This week, I'm going to be looking at Mason Rudolph. I think he is the one, the tops out of this group that I think I would target at least for this week. I think over the course of the season, if I'm targeting a quarterback that I want to keep on my roster, I think it's going to be Daniel Jones. With Golden Tate still not back, with Sterling Shepard still a question mark with the concussion, I do think that this week might be some growing pains for him. But I think through the course of the season, as those players start coming back, I think I like his outlook the best out of all of them. So if you're looking for this week, I'm looking at Mason Rudolph. If you're looking at the course of the season, it's going to be Daniel Jones for me.
I love it. Yeah, I really do think Daniel Jones will surprise some people. And then Rudolph, I agree too. Like the pedigree is actually there. I think people still understand it. They really don't know who he is yet, because it's all about Big Ben in Pittsburgh and whoever else is there. But times have changed, folks. Really good stuff. You know,
One thing I want to say about that is we've seen them rotate running backs through their system and find success. Now it's time to see if we can rotate a quarterback through their system and find some success. And I really think that they can. I think that system is one that can sustain, you know, a quarterback that's not named Big Ben. He was there last year, so it's not like he's a rookie that's coming in and learning the system. He hasn't necessarily played, but he at least has been there and knows the system. So I think he's going to be pretty darn good.
Yeah, he's a little bit better than, who was it, like Landry Jones that they had there before. I feel a little more confident with Mason Rudolph back there. At least at least when he's winging it around, he knows what he's doing a little more. So
absolutely.
We'll see what happens there. But, Steve, this was a blast. I'm really glad we got to do this and talk some football. We'll have to do it again sometime. But before I sign us off here, why don't you once again remind everybody where they can find you and all the work at Fighting Chance Fantasy.
Well, and I want to apologize because I didn't fall off my chair for that comedic entertainment, so I apologize for that. But you can find me on Twitter at FantasyGeek37. You can go to FightingChanceFantasy.com, find all of our content. You can check out our podcast page. Articles are on our main page and all kinds of fun stuff. And like I said, Fantasy Survivor coming up, so go ahead and tweet me if you're interested, and we'll go ahead and include you in, and hopefully you can be playing there, because I think we might have I have to check with my partner Ryan, but I think we might have one or two people from previous seasons playing with us again this season as well.
Awesome, everybody. Go check Steve out over on Twitter, like you said, at FantasyGeek37, and all the great stuff at Fighting Chance Fantasy. Awesome people, awesome friends of the podcast. And Steve, thanks for joining me, man. I can't wait to do this again sometime.
Thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to it again sometime as well.
Awesome. Everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 212, recapping your week 4 fantasy baseball action, or fantasy football action, with a look ahead to week 3. Catch you guys later.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.